Good afternoon, everyone. It's Thursday afternoon, and a group of heathens who are all hellbound are assembled around a round table to talk in second week about Trump. You think I'm kidding? No. Last week's podcast resulted in comments suggesting that there's no way we can be born again to even talk the way we did last week. That's the level of Trump ideology that is going on, idolatry that's going on in America. So we have a balanced article, I think. Is that a fair statement, Steve?
Yes.
Is this a balanced article? And so where'd you find it?
Actually, my daughter sent it to me via Facebook Messenger, asked me if I would read it and give her my thoughts.
All right, very good. And so we are going to go through this article. But before we go through this article entitled Chosen by God, the Man Who Ate Honey But Pulled Down Pillars, GrandstandNews.com. Joey, a lot of people think we only have two choices in this coming election, but you don't agree with that. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And so who are the choices that we have available to us in the state of North Carolina?
In the state of North Carolina and in all 50 states, you have three choices: Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, and Gary Johnson. Those are the only three candidates on the ballot in all 50 states.
Okay.
And Gary Johnson, the third-party candidate, seems like a long shot to many, and he is a long shot. But there is a scenario in which neither Hillary Clinton nor Donald Trump could get elected thanks to the Electoral College.
Yep.
If Gary Johnson could win New Mexico, and Evan McMullen, who's only on the ballot in, I think, nine states, could win Utah, and if Donald Trump wins enough states, they could deny anyone from reaching the 270 Electoral College votes. Thus, the vote would go into the House of Representatives, and they would end up deciding who the next president would be, and they would choose from one of those four guys, well, one of those four people, because they won a state. And if you win a state, you can win the Electoral College. Is that fair, Dave?
Yeah. If nobody reaches the 270 threshold, like you said, it gets thrown in. Both president and vice president goes into Congress, and the vice presidential would be pretty simple, because you'd have Pence and Kane, and probably whoever's holding the majority wins that vote, and so the vice president would be set aside. That would be taken care of very quickly. But they can vote all the way up until Inauguration Day on who the president's going to be, and of course, most Republicans would never vote for Hillary, and most Democrats would never vote for Trump, and so there would be a push and pull, and so the scenario would be you'd have this a couple third-party candidates that want a state that a Democrat and a Republican might compromise on, and their vice president would be whoever won the other side. So it would be a situation where instead of taking Hillary, instead of taking Trump, they would compromise and take Gary Johnson or Evan McMullen, and you know, Mike Pence or Tim Kaine would be his vice president, and that's how it would move forward.
And that's not the first time that's happened in history.
It's been a while.
1824, I think is what I read.
1824, John Quincy Adams was decided president by that process.
Which Andrew Jackson said that election was rigged too. So there is a parallel.
And Andrew Jackson was not a really nice guy either.
Yeah, and he had great hair too. So yeah. have much in common.
So does the sitting president have a veto in that process?
Nope.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope. So all those conspiracy theories that somehow he's going to be able to do something to change that is not really valid. There's not going to be too many people that are going to stand for that on either side of the aisle.
So the discussion Joe and I had yesterday a little bit was, okay, if you don't feel good voting for Trump, in North Carolina, for example, you really don't have any other options in the sense of, if we're talking pure pragmatism, mm-hmm. you know, I'm not talking about your conscience, I'm not talking about anything about that, but a vote for Gary Johnson or Evan McMullen, if you write him in North Carolina, does absolutely nothing, because neither one of them are anywhere close. They're not going to win this state. And so if you want the chaos, which, you know, I'd be okay
with. Joe, are you okay with the chaos?
I'm okay with chaos.
If you want the chaos, Trump has to win North Carolina.
So, to deny Hillary
the 270.
Yeah. If Hillary wins North Carolina, it's probably a done deal. Right. That's enough electoral votes probably to swing it her direction. And so Trump has to win the North Carolinas and the Ohios and the Floridas in order to keep Hillary. And so what it would end up is, like, Hillary would end up with about 260-something, and Trump would have 260 or so, mm-hmm. and then you'd have five votes here and four votes here, whatever Utah and New Mexico have, but nobody would have the magic 270, and so it would have to get thrown to Congress.
David, is it fair to say that most people don't understand the Electoral College?
Oh, yeah. I don't think anybody I think the great majority.
I don't even know if the politicians all understand it.
I don't know that I understand the purpose of it anymore. I think it's kind of outlived its, which is a whole separate thing. But I don't think you're common voters.
Yeah, I mean,
have you seen the PragerU video on the Electoral College?
Not on that one. No.
I would like you to watch that. Yeah. Maybe we'll look at that in a future podcast between now and the election. We'll probably just stay on these topics until right up to the week of the election, since it's so relevant. But they really talk about. PragerU does a good job of explaining how if we go with a pure popular vote, that the cities will just dominate the structure.
The original purpose of the Electoral College was to protect the small states,
right?
You know, to have them to have a voice. And but if you've noticed, what's become of it is really this election comes down to about five states,
right?
It really doesn't matter. You know, Clinton doesn't have to go campaign in California, and Trump won't go to California because that's a done deal. Neither one of them need to go to Texas because that's a done deal. They don't have to go to New York because it's a done deal. You know, they don't have to go to most of the middle states because it's a done deal. And so it may be outliving its usefulness.
So what you do is you look at the Electoral College maps for the last five, six elections, go back about 20 years, and like Dave is saying, you end up with about 10 states that give or take, based upon the strength of any one candidate, swap out between blue and red on a regular consistent basis. Those are what the media is calling our swing states.
But that's a state where your vote actually matters.
Right. Yeah, right. And we are a swing state, and we have been historically a swing state since Reagan.
Yeah, and the odd thing is a state like Georgia is all of a sudden a swing state, and Georgia has been solidly Republican for a while.
No, it's never even been a consideration.
And so now, because of Trump, Georgia is a swing state. So I mean, you could have a total blowout, or they're completely missing votes, and Trump is able to keep it close, and you have this, what people are going to say is fictional scenario, but it's probable. And if you live in New Mexico or you live in Utah and you really don't like the two choices, you ought to consider voting. I don't know if we have anybody listening in those states, but consider that out of pure pragmatism. To vote for one of those third-party candidates.
But you're making the assumption that they don't like Trump.
Right, and there's a lot of people that do like Trump, but there's also a lot of people that don't like Trump. So
well, the Utah situation is the really interesting one, because if you look at the polls in Utah, I mean, Evan McMullen's not on the radar really anywhere across the country. But in Utah, the three candidates are polling in the mid-20s. They're all within 2 percentage points of each other, which is insane for a third-party candidate to be that close to the two majority candidates.
Yeah, because he's a Mormon. Election. That's
he's
the
Mormon,
big thing.
Yeah.
He's a Mormon. And then Gary Johnson's still at like 12% in Utah.
Yeah.
So that's really the crazy
scenario.
So if
we get all those Gary Johnson people in Utah to vote for Evan McMullen,
right? That's
he'd win the state.
But the problem is no one's really... And in 1860, we had four candidates that ran for president, and three of those candidates really ended up pushing Abraham Lincoln in because the Southern Democrats and the Northern Democrats were so divided, and you had another third odd name party, and Lincoln was able to win the vote that way. It would then go to the Electoral College,
right?
But there was enough divisiveness that the Republican Party won their first election.
Even Gary Johnson really is a balance between the two front-leading candidates. He's not as conservative as you'd want as a Christian, but he's definitely not as liberal as you would fear.
Right. Mm-hmm. He's really fiscally conservative.
Yeah. He did well as a governor, brought a lot of wealth to them, and he was a Republican.
Yeah, he was.
New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wish he was a little more presidential.
he's
not in the same way Trump is presidential, but he's a little goofy.
He's a goofball.
Yeah.
Right.
He's
a goofball. Yeah. But he did a lot in New Mexico. In a Democratic state, he was able to have two terms, cut the budget. He did some pretty good things there. He defunded, one of his things was a push to defund abortion in the state Medicare. And that was
He's still pro-choice.
Even though he's pro-choice, he doesn't think that the money should be going to that. So there's a balance when someone says he's pro-choice, but he's not wanting to fund these things either. Mm-hmm. So,
and he did. He took New Mexico from a negative balance to a positive balance.
Right.
I mean, he didn't break them even. He actually got them to a plus side. Of it.
But we're dealing with a voter base that, number one, doesn't know who he is, and number two, has no idea what that even means.
So what we're really doing is we're appealing to Arizona right now.
Think about what you just said, David.
Nobody knows what a balanced budget is, or what that takes. Or
you would hope
what
the Electoral College this
Nobody
year could fix
that.
Some of these that's the benefit of a third party.
I mean, if you went around today and said, who's the vice president of the United States? The guy that's been the vice president of the United States
for
the last almost 8 years.
Yeah, almost, right.
And I over half probably wouldn't know who he is. I mean,
I'm going to put that on my test tomorrow in Bible and see
what
happens.
See what happens.
I'm going to put that as the number one question. All right, let's get started, Brian.
All right, so chosen by God, the man who ate honey but pulled down pillars. He doesn't drink wine. He has a tendency to lie. He has a weakness for women, and his hair is sort of a big deal. No, I'm
huge.
Not. No, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm referring to Samson, God's appointed judge over Israel. The biblical book of Judges chronicles a 300-year period of the nation of Israel's history. In this book, we are introduced to a man named Samson. Judges 13:24 says, "Then the woman gave birth to a son and named him Samson, and the child grew up, and the Lord blessed him." Samson was appointed to serve as judge over Israel at a time when the people were absent any consistent, strong, or righteous political leadership. The story of Samson takes place right before the reign of the kings in Israel, and during a time when everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Samson is an interesting character, to say the least. He is not your traditional Moses or David or Daniel. Moses was more humble than any man on earth. David was a man after God's own heart. And Daniel was delivered from extreme persecution on a number of occasions because of his unwavering faith towards God. Samson, on the other hand, often chose the easy route, whether it be by lying, deceiving, or direct disobedience. Samson usually found a way to get what he wanted without acting righteously. My guess is Samson, who slept with a prostitute and was a womanizer, probably wasn't a role model that Israel's parents told their children to imitate. So why did God appoint someone like Samson when at other times he raised up Othniel, the son of Caleb, or Deborah, the prophetess, or Gideon, the general? Surely somebody with qualities more similar to these individuals would have made for a better role model and judge to lead Israel back to God. But Isaiah 55:8 points out, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." So to answer that question, we must go back to the very beginning of the story in Judges 13. An angel of the Lord appears to Samson's mother, and the angel tells Samson's mother that she will be blessed with a son, and that he shall begin to deliver Israel from their enemies. Now note, the angel does not say that Samson will deliver from their enemies, but that he will begin the process. This is important. The angel told Samson's parents that their son would be a Nazarite to God from the womb. The Nazarite vow was taken by individuals who dedicated themselves to the Lord. The vow prohibited a person from consuming wine or strong drink, cutting their hair, or coming into contact with a dead body. This means that the Lord was sanctifying Samson for a special purpose. As a blessing, God endowed Samson with incredible strength. The source of this great strength came from his hair. But while Samson's strength allowed him to accomplish great feats, it also often led to terrible misery and tragedy in his life. On one occasion, Samson was attacked by a lion while traveling with his parents. He used his great strength to overcome and kill the wild beast. Continuing on his journey, he came across a foreign woman who he described as right in his eyes. He demanded that his father get her for him. His parents were displeased with his request and implored him to choose a righteous woman from among his own people. Samson refused. But the Bible tells us that his parents did not know that it was of the Lord. His parents failed to remember that God always has a plan. God is always in control. Later, Samson returns to the dead carcass of the lion that he had killed. And starving, Samson noticed that there was a swarm of bees and honey inside the body of the lion. The Bible says Samson scraped the honey into his hands and went on his way eating. Unfortunately, this means that Samson broke his Nazarite vow by touching a dead body. Samson had sinned against God. It is not recorded that Samson ever asked for forgiveness of this sin. In fact, the Bible tells us that he kept this as a secret from his parents. On another occasion, Samson falls in love with a woman called Delilah. This woman enticed, betrayed, and sold Samson into the hands of his enemies. Instead of choosing a woman who would have pleased God and his parents, Samson chose a woman who cared nothing for his well-being. He may have suspected this, but because he lied multiple times to her to cover up the source of his great strength. Finally, he became so annoyed with her that he succumbed to the pressure and told her his secret. This was one of Samson's greatest failures, and it would ultimately cost him his life. After being betrayed and sold into the hands of his enemies, Samson would have his eyes gouged out and be forced into hard labor in a foreign land. God's plan had failed because Samson was the wrong man for the job. He had broken his Nazarite vow, lied on numerous occasions, and chosen women who were not pleasing to God. Realizing that the situation was hopeless and that Samson was a lost cause, God forsook his chosen leader. Wait. That is how the story ends, right? Actually, it's not. While in captivity, Samson's hair began to grow again. And as his hair began to grow, he began to regain strength. On a certain day when his captors were feasting, they called out Samson to amuse them. To them, he was nothing more than a clown and entertainer. They chained him between two pillars and looked on while Samson entertained them. Samson was humiliated by his enemies, who believed that they had defeated him. They never suspected for a moment that he would be able to avenge himself. But then again, they had not factored in God. God heard Samson's plea for help, and he answered him. Samson regained his miraculous strength and used it to bring righteous vengeance upon the enemies of the Lord. With one giant heave, Samson pushed on both of the pillars he was chained to and collapsed the temple on top of all of his enemies. The number of people he killed that day were more than he had killed in his entire life. As a warrior, that says a lot. Samson died, but he died on God's terms because he had judged Israel for 20 years. So you see, God has a plan, and his plan is perfect. We have a very narrow view of the world in which we live, and we are often confused why things transpire around us the way they do. We see something that looks dangerous, and we run. We see someone who looks flawed attempting to ascend to the highest office in the land, and we ridicule them. We say, he can't be president, he's nothing like Christ. Or he can't be my child's role model, he has said nasty things about women, on TV no less. Who said a ruler had to be like Christ? No man is devoid of sin like Jesus was. While others are living better lives, or perhaps obeying the word of God more faithfully than others, that doesn't give us the moral high ground. As Christians, to discount a leader's ability to rule over us, a person's ability to govern a country is not predicated on his religion. Is it?
Okay, are we good?
No. Because you can make the same statement for Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, we can just change out the names.
Yep.
Because she's not on a moral high ground. She's not ethical.
It's like
she doesn't have great hair.
But I was talking about this with the students today. You're driving around Fayetteville nowadays, and I don't know if it's in the other regions, but you're listening to the radio, and the former CIA director from 2011, 2013, comes on and endorses Hillary Clinton. And I tell the students, okay, not setting what party we might be affiliated with aside, let's look at from this aspect. Okay, this is a guy who says, okay, we have to protect our nation's secrets so that we don't weaken our nation and jeopardize our nation. So Benghazi comes into play. Did she do a good job of protecting the covert operations as a Secretary of State when it came to Benghazi? No. Did she learn from it? I don't know. What experience does Trump have with that?
None.
So now we go to the servers and the emails and the hacking from China based upon that server. Did she protect our nation's secrets? No.
Clearly not.
Has she learned from it? I don't know. What experience does Trump have with it?
None.
So now I'm left to look at the motivation of the person who's giving this endorsement. Former CIA director, could he be vying for the position of Secretary of Homeland Security, who has oversight of the entire intelligence community, which he has experience in? Yes. That's a viable option. Therefore, I can't use this message as a ringing endorsement for a candidate any more than I can use what's being said here when it can apply to both.
That's saying Hillary would be involved in quid pro quo. Oh yeah, we found those emails too, didn't we? You know, I mean, it's over and over and over again with this stuff.
Causes this, you know, if you finish the article,
yeah,
then he brings out why he feels that Trump is a better candidate than Hillary, although I, you know, up to this point, yes, you know.
Yeah, up to this point, what was been presented.
You know, neither of them, you know,
right,
the person's ability to govern the country is not predicated on their religion, you know, because obviously neither of them Yeah, they both claim to be church, but very far from that.
Like David pointed out, though, he at least has the hair. Like,
but even contextually, I think the comparison, the way the comparison going is dangerous contextually. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, we don't know who God is going to choose. If you want to look back 25 years and see God raising up Donald Trump to do amazing things in America that no one thought he would do despite all of his wickedness, that's one thing. But right now, in the moment, to apply a biblical narrative to Donald Trump today, I don't think is contextually
But I think
somebody's that, name and throw it in.
Right, but again, you know, when we talked last week, we basically, you know, discounted him and said he's not worthy because he doesn't meet the criteria of the gospel and he's not going to this, that, and the other.
No, I didn't.
So, all I was trying to do is present an opposing argument to what was discussed last week.
Right, and all I said last week was, I didn't say that he doesn't meet the standards of the gospel. I said I think our ringing endorsements of Donald Trump from the evangelical community throws mud on the gospel. That's my concern with how bad he is and seeing how bad he is, and yet so many people are rushing to lift him up. That's what bothers me.
Well, if you look at the list, I mean, that might be a good thing to look at these things on the back page about the policies. And I mean, we can we can go down these policies, you know, and I think probably the number one on the list is the one you want, the one that might sway you that direction is the appointment of the conservative Supreme Court justices. You know, I agree, that's probably the biggest consequence of this election going forward. You know, again, we talked about this before, but you no guarantee what judges will do once they get up there. But he does say he's going to appoint Supreme Court justices. But, you know, if you move down the line, you know, destroy radical Islamic terrorism, I don't know that I have confidence that he's going to destroy radical Islamic terrorism. He's got a lot of rhetoric going. Secure the country's borders. He says he's going to, but he also says he's going to make Mexico pay for it. I don't know how that all is going to work out. You know, restore law and order. How does he do that? How does a president do that? You know, okay, negotiate fair trade deals. He says he wants to get rid of NAFTA. Lower taxes on the middle class. Well, plenty of people have said that, and that hasn't been the case
either.
Read
my lips.
Yeah, exactly. Repeal and replace Obamacare. He can't do that on his own.
But Hillary doesn't claim to do any
sure,
of those.
Yeah, and I agree. You know, but there's a lot of things here that, I mean, I think we could limit this list to about three things that he has control over.
If he does that, it's worth it.
It may be, yeah, if he does what he says he's going to do. There's just a lot of stuff here that really the president doesn't have all that much impact on.
Sure, and he may get...
He's going to get rid of political correctness? Really? I mean, do we expect him to fundamentally change the country in that way?
But he could protect the Second Amendment.
Right.
True. There's, you know,
well,
at least...
With Department of Justice appointments, he could certainly make some headway there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But on the... I mean, we know for sure that the next president gets to appoint one Supreme Court justice.
At least,
that's
yeah.
all we know. The others have to resign or die. And who knows if Ginsburg sees that Trump gets elected. She doesn't hold
on
until 2020 and see what happens then. So maybe the election changes and then she resigns. So there's even though he would get to do that, you don't know if he's going to get to it.
And we have to recognize, too, since Chief Justice Warren, whether conservative or liberal, all Supreme Court justices have used loose construction when interpreting the Constitution. They interpret it into it, and they all expand government.
Well, and part of the reason they're doing that is because the legislative branch does not do their job and throws everything to the courts, and they end up being the arbiter of everything.
But this is a problem
legal.
All over the country, because basically if you pass a bill in North Carolina and the Republicans don't like it, and this does issue, they appeal to the Supreme Court, and the Republicans pass a bill, then they appeal to, and the Democrats don't like it, they appeal to the Supreme Court. No one's willing to...
Yeah, well, I was at a conference on Tuesday... Crazy. Up at Shepherd's, and they had a little session on what you can say from the pulpit politically. And David Gibbs III was there, and Justice Paul Newby and Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. And Dan Forrest brings up the point of, here's the situation, is nobody pays attention to the rule of law anymore. So Charlotte passes a law that is totally unconstitutional, that a municipality does not have the power to pass. So the state steps up and does their job and deems it unconstitutional and rectifies the situation. And Charlotte files a lawsuit and goes to Virginia and sits in front of two judges who say that the law... So he says there's no point in state government. because you just skipped over the entire. They didn't do it. They didn't take a bill to the legislature, you know, to pass through to do it legally. They jumped over it and went to the courts. And because our legislative entities have given all the power to the courts, now two guys sitting in Virginia can invalidate a law in addition to the marriage law that millions of people voted for. They're not even in the same state anymore. So what's the point of state government?
And so what's the matter in the court of public opinion? And you got people who are high school, college basketball fans deciding an issue.
That's right.
Well, the good news is that men's college basketball didn't leave the state. Only women's college basketball.
So, all right, how did we move to basketball?
Well, the NCAA tournament did leave. But, yeah.
And the ACC tournament. Yeah.
When was the amendment passed that made senators elected at large? Do you remember the year of ratification for that? Was it?
Yeah, I don't remember.
It was the 1920s, 1930s, in that time frame. Yeah. That's when we lost our balance in this idea, and it's led us to a coercive central government, which was only enhanced under Kennedy and Johnson. Mm-hmm. The point of this is that when the state no longer was able to appoint the senators that represented the states at the federal level, and they would be elected at large, they became representatives of the greater populace, and therefore we have two houses that are exactly the same.
And we have a lot of gerrymandering and other things going on.
So the state has lost its voice, and that's why a city thinks it can skip its state's government and go to a federal court system and win.
And they have.
And they have.
Over and over again.
And over and over and over again, whether we want it or not, who you elect for senator and who you elect for president really comes down to who are they going to appoint and who's the Senate going to approve to put on the black robe of the Supreme Court and rule our country for the next 40 years.
Well, and once again, the general population has no clue what state government even is.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about they don't know the vice president. Ask somebody who their state senators are, or their state representatives.
Right. Oh,
clueless. I mean, people don't know that.
What concerns me the most about this article is the fact, I mean, they brought God, they brought the Bible into this article. So
the author did.
The author did, yes.
Okay.
Okay. But there's a disconnect because what I think would happen today, if Samson was around today, the talking points for the conservative Christian lump, the group that's supposed to all vote the same because you're a Christian, you're supposed to be Republican, and right on down the line would say, bullet point is, you got to have long hair if you want the power of God. No, it wasn't the hair. God was doing it. You know, the fact that Samson's hair grew back or that his hair was long, you know, Samson's long hair didn't pull down those pillars. God gave him the power. And the guy writing the article is trying to connect, you know, well, this idea, God's in control no matter what, was right. And that's our point. No, even if Hillary gets elected, God's in control.
Yeah.
But I think there's slightly a disconnect because his point is, well, it's Donald Trump because XYZ.
Yeah, and my big problem with the contention.
No, that's not his point, John. No. I would disagree with you. I think his point is that we think that we ought to get a choir boy in the White House, and God uses all kinds of heathens and pagans
to
accomplish his will.
And I think Gary Johnson is no choir boy. Gary Johnson is no choir boy. But ethically, he seems to be very sound.
Yes.
He's not a perfect person. He's certainly not an independent fundamental Baptist by any stretch of the imagination. He's living with his current girlfriend. He's been divorced. He smoked weed. I mean, he's done all sorts of things that are crazy.
So is Samson.
Right.
He'd legalize it.
And so I'm not saying we have to have a choir. I would just love somebody that would just...
So tell me why Gary Johnson is a better candidate than Trump.
Cut the budget. He wants to cut the budget. He wants to rein in the budget. And the other part is, he says, I will appoint Democrats and Republicans to be in my cabinet to try to promote unity, to cut down on the divisiveness that's in the country. That's why he appeals to me.
Which is why he left the Republican Party in the first place, because he was sick of being
ostracized
and pushed towards by a party line in this bipartisan conflict that our country is currently locked in.
All right, so let's go down this list. Go ahead, Jack, and then
this article, actually, once we get past the list, Pastor, focuses in on the very first thing on the list, which is the appointment of a Supreme Court justice. I think that's why the author made the point that Brian said. He goes, note, it doesn't say that he will deliver. It says that he begins. I think the idea that the author never really clearly articulated, even in the reading of this and writing of it, is he's looking at Trump in some, at paralleling with Samson, as if he can appoint this one judge, it could begin the process. Because I think this guy is astute enough, if you read underneath the lines, that he recognizes that it really boils down to the Supreme Court rules our country.
I just think it's I just don't like the apples to apples comparison with Samson, because right. I think you're missing the point of the Samson story, the way he's portraying it.
Right.
You know, sure, we're good with the sovereignty of God, and he uses wicked people to accomplish his goals. Okay. But the point of the Samson story is he's the last judge before Samuel. He's a shell of a judge. He violates his Nazirite vow. He doesn't do anything right. He's anti-God, really, in the way he lives his life. And God uses a wicked man to punish even more wicked people in the Philistines. Samson did not make Israel great again.
No.
He did not save Israel. God used Samson to destroy a wicked people in the Philistines, and that's it. You know, there wasn't any revival of God in Israel after Samson came around. You know, so I would rather him go with a Gideon rather than a Samson. It would be more consistent with what we're using a flawed individual to accomplish a goal. Because I don't think you want to be Samson. You know, there's nothing positive about Samson in this story.
But I think the author's point, though, too, is that I don't think he's thinking there's a lot of positives in Trump either. Yeah. It's just a comparison of between Trump and Hillary. And, you know, on the last page of the article, he basically says, you know, we do have to make a choice.
She might be Delilah. I don't know.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the last page. Well. So we'll let the author speak for himself.
As voters, we should cast our vote for the individual who is most capable of improving and protecting our country. As Christians, we should be out on the streets spreading the good message to those lost in sin. As we accomplish our task, Lord willing, society will draw closer to God. As society improves, so will our presidential nominees. Trump will not infringe on our rights to worship and peaceably assemble. Trump will appoint Supreme Court justices in the mold of Justice Scalia. Mm-hmm. As Christians, this should be a comfort to us. And yet, while the Supreme Court does have great authority over the law of the land, Christians should not put all their faith in man. Our faith should be in God. In spite of his sins, Samson was given a spot in the Heroes of Faith chapter in Hebrews. In this chapter, Samson is listed alongside Abraham, Moses, and David. Sadly, you wouldn't know that Samson had great faith in God by looking at the life that he lived. Samson was misguided about many things, which is evident by the many mistakes and shortcomings he committed. But no one can take away Samson's spot in Hebrews 11. The inspired author of Hebrews lists him with other great heroes of faith for a reason. Yes, Trump has eaten honey. But who's to say he also won't pull down pillars?
Okay, so we let the author speak for himself, and the listener can judge that for what he or she wants to do.
The first paragraph on this page, we should be out in the streets spreading the good message to those lost in their sin. As we accomplish our task, Lord willing, society will draw closer to God. As society improves, so will our presidential nominees. Again, it's very post-millennial.
Well, of course it is, yeah. Joey, and I underline it three times. Because this same entity would say we're living in the last days.
Right.
Well, if we're living in the last days, what we know to be sure is society doesn't improve.
So vote for Hillary Clinton so Jesus can come back.
I mean, biblically...
I'm joking.
I mean, we know. I mean, the Olivet Discourse makes it very clear. Iniquity will abound, the love of many will wax cold. Things are not going to get better. So, I mean, this idea, I understand what the point the author's making. And in an individual basis, and in a church basis, in a family basis, the gospel does impact. But I don't hold out a lot of hope that America's going to turn around and experience a third great awakening.
No, and I even think, as voters, we should cast a vote for the individual who's most capable of improving and protecting our country. I don't even know that those two candidates are the ones that are going to... I mean, and then the other point is appointing a justice. Gary Johnson would appoint Clarence Thomas. He said, I would appoint someone because he seems to be the one that is most strictly adhered to the Constitution over
yes.
his time.
Yes, because Gary Johnson, because of his libertarian stance, and that's something we have to understand about the Libertarian Party. They are not conservative and they are not liberal, which is what hurts them so badly. is you're free to be as liberal or you're free to be as conservative as you want to be. So a person who's a libertarian could very much be a very conservative person in theology, could be a very conservative person in economics, could align with us very well. But the reason why they're libertarian is they say the government shouldn't define that. It should be left to higher organizations or outside organizations like the church to influence society instead of the government coming down and regulating what bathroom you use.
And certainly there's a balance there because Peter tells us that government exists to punish those who do evil and to reward that which is good. Mm-hmm. And the Word of God clearly communicates what is good. So to be a evangelical Christian, I can't fully embrace a libertarian ideology.
I don't think you can be a pure libertarian.
You can't. But just so the people understand, that's the mindset that Gary Johnson is going to approach.
Right.
So when he says, I want to take somebody who interprets the Constitution quite literally and holds the closest to it, he's taking a more conservative stance than any Republican president we've had since... Well, since the 1900s,
right?
Right, and I think at the same on the I don't think that Gary Johnson isn't going to protect the country. I think he wants to do that. He says he wants an invisible defense, one that's strong and built up, and that's not strained from almost 20 years of fighting almost an invisible enemy that's hard to find and hard to defeat. And he wants to scale some of that back, rebuild the military, cut the budget so we're not. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars of debt. So I think you can make a very good case that he is the better candidate of the three, despite some of his kookiness. But which one of these three candidates isn't a little weird or crazy or nuts?
Right, but only in the extreme scenario that you guys described at the beginning of the podcast,
right,
is there any possibility
that
the man will ever be...
The problem, though, is we've been told that we take our marching orders. You have to vote for Republican and you have to vote for a Dem. If you're a liberal, you have to vote for a Democrat, and if you're a Republican, you have to vote for a Republican.
But in this situation, in the state of North Carolina, a vote for Trump is a vote for Gary Johnson.
Right. In this case, it is. Potentially.
Potentially.
Yes, it has that potential.
Or a vote for Trump is definitely a vote against Hillary.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We're trying to, in the state of North Carolina, deny her.
Yeah,
the,
none of us are suggesting that Hillary is a viable option.
Right, and
at all.
And I guess in my view,
you got to say that louder because they didn't hear that last week.
Exactly.
No.
Clearly,
people walked away thinking that we were Democrats. That
we have
a
and
Hillary.
And that's Joey's point is, well, if you're not voting for him, you must be voting for her. No, that's not the only alternative.
And I said it before on here. The reason we're in the situation we are in is because we've been voting for two parties so long, and they have such a stranglehold on the system. When you have to get 15% of the vote in the polls to be a part of a debate, when we don't even elect our president based on the popular vote, and yet the system is skewed toward these two parties. And as much as they pretend like they hate each other, they're very much in bed together a lot.
Would you say it was rigged?
Well, you certainly could say that it has that potential.
He's going to wait till after the election and let you know what he thinks.
Yeah.
He's going to keep us in suspense.
What do you think?
Well, I think for us in North Carolina, I would agree with what you say. I mean, I North Carolina, the only way to try to keep Hillary out of the presidency is to vote for Donald Trump. You know, do I agree with everything that he stands for and on? No, I don't. You know, when my daughter asked me to review this and give her a comment back, you know, my comment to her was, I think too many people are attempting to spiritualize the pros and cons of Donald Trump, and it's not necessary. You know, you have base in North Carolina, we really and truly have three votes. We either vote for Trump, we vote for Hillary, or we don't vote, which then becomes really more than likely a vote for Hillary. And so what we're faced with, what we need to choose is, you know, we need to pray and feel what's best for our country. And then, you know, obviously at the end of the day, we've got to leave it in God's hands. You know, just as, you know, God is going to... Either he gives the will of the people to the people and gives them what they want, you know, as he did with the...
Israel,
you know, when they cried foul about the manna and they wanted meat, and he said, okay, fine, I'll give you meat. I'll give it to you until it comes out your nose. You know, I'll just force it down your throat.
Or when they ask for a king.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then, yes, of course. And when they ask for the king, he gives them the king, even though, you know, he said, that's not what I want for you.
But ironically, in Deuteronomy, he gives conditions for a king.
Yeah.
Right.
Because I know you're going to ask for one.
Right. You know, but again, at the end of the day, you know, I feel like, you know, as voters, we've got to cast our vote for the individual that we feel can help our country, you know, and, you know, will Donald Trump do everything that he said? Of course not. You know, no president has. You know, they all have all the promises they make and all the great things they're going to do or not going to do. And, you know, they lie and say, you know, read my lips, I'm not going to raise taxes, and they raise them. And, you know, I'm going to do this and that and the other. And that doesn't come to pass either. And, but again, you know, as we compare Donald Trump to Hillary, I mean, I think, you know, sure, everybody knows where Hillary stands. And I don't stand with anything that she stands for.
Would you say that, Joey?
Say what?
Steve said, I don't stand for anything that she stands for. Would you say that?
I think some Republicans can make the case then the reason they're going to vote for her is because she's going to be really strong on national defense. She's going to keep fighting these wars. She's going to keep involving ourselves in those areas. So I think I don't know that there's a whole lot, because I want to scale back that. So I don't know that there's a whole lot that Hillary Clinton and I have in common. Maybe the closest thing that I could at least see from her perspective is
free college, isn't it?
No, healthcare. I can at least grasp that from her perspective. But other than that, there's not a whole lot that I would agree with Hillary Clinton on.
I think there's kind of a two-edged sword going on here, in the sense that there's a good side to this, in that nobody's trying to spiritualize Hillary Clinton, because the Democrats and the liberals don't care.
Right.
You know, they don't. So there's a positive in the sense that we as Christians are trying to find something good in the man. I mean, I think that's good, but then at the same time, on the other side, it entwines us so much with the Republican Party that it can be counterproductive to our position. And so, you know, there's a push and pull going on here that the left doesn't have to deal with.
Yeah, the danger is
they don't care.
The danger is we lose our voice, because now all of a sudden, how can we even take you seriously if you have a Trump Pence sign in your front yard and you're going to talk to me about loving my neighbor as myself, when clearly you've so backed a man that doesn't love his neighbors as himself?
And it's what you've said. I mean, if you want to vote for the guy, vote for the guy. You know, I mean, that, like Steve said, that's not a spiritual decision necessarily. You don't have to entwine it with that. But when we try to shoehorn him in, you know, kind of like what this article is doing a little bit, not as bad as some of the other ones, but I'm trying to shoehorn him into a Christian-esque sort of personality, that's where we get into trouble. You know, well, you know, when you got James Dobson saying, I heard he accepted Christ recently, but, you know, stop that. You know, like, we don't need him to be that. You know, stop trying to spiritualize it to the point that you're trying to make a guy look Christian that's clearly not, that's going to hurt the name of Christ. You know, and I think that's where our trouble is with Trump. If we just want to take it out and say, listen, he's a better candidate because he's conservative. Not because he's Christian, not because he's Christian friendly, because I think he's a better candidate and I think the Supreme Court justices are the number one issue on the ballot. Okay, let's go with that.
Yeah, take away the whole article and then give us that list you think he's going to do.
Let's talk about issues.
Well, let's do this. I've met Hillary Clinton.
I have.
I've sat no further from her than we are right now.
You probably went to school with some of her cousins.
No, she was from Illinois, remember?
Bill's cousins then.
But I didn't know Chelsea. I know Hillary Clinton. I've sat and I've talked with her. And I've talked with President Clinton, Bill Clinton. And I've talked with Chelsea. And we've sat and we've had dinner together. She's cold. Yeah, she's going to continue to fight the fight. But she doesn't care if she leaves you on the battlefield. She will leave you stranded in a heartbeat. She's cold and she's manipulative. She is the coldest woman I have ever met in my entire life.
She's a nasty woman.
She's highly intelligent.
We won the Trump.
She's highly intelligent. She's very much by the law, as far as the loopholes of the law allow. That's why she wants to have so much legislation for gun control and everything else, is because it's her manipulative lawyer instinct kicking in. She's not personable. And when it comes down to it, she will throw anybody under the bus to have her agenda.
Maybe literally. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
They'll find a bullet in your back.
To also dump her bus's sewage in your drains.
But, yeah. But then again, I'm not sure that Donald Trump would be any better, considering the man doesn't really seem to have a moral footing.
Right.
And then, so I think the most important line for us as Christians comes right here in this one line: our faith should be in God. Because remember, Nero was also an ordained ruler over Christian people.
Sure he was. Yeah, Romans 13 tells me, Jack, that there isn't anyone that isn't in position that God has.
And that was written
right,
at a time.
But on
that
the
was
flip
written
side,
at the time.
I don't think, since we have a choice, and obviously
right.
Nero,
right.
They didn't have
make,
a choice
make,
to
make
vote
make the,
him
the,
or
make
not.
Make the best choice you can.
Right.
But in the end,
you know,
I'm not going to
vote somebody
happens,
in that's going to turn around and persecute me on purpose.
Yeah, but on November 15th, 7 days after the election, or if it goes to the House and we're all the way up to the day of inauguration, we have to remember that ultimately it comes back to the Christians survive Nero,
right.
We can survive whoever's elected.
Right, and I think looking at history, you know, and again, I'm not saying that America is going to be great again, I'm not, but, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've looked at and, you know, gone back over in my mind is, you know, and when I had the opportunity to travel with Lauren this, you know, just late spring, early mm-hmm. summer, you know, overseas, you know, some of these nations, countries are thousands and thousands of years old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, I look at America, how young we are, and now I'm looking at these other countries and, you know, listening to the history of, you know, how they were great and how they fell and how they're great and how they fell, the ups and downs and ups and downs. And I'm like, you know, we're such a baby as a country compared to them, and they still exist. You know, they're still there. You know, they still function. They operate. They're, some of them are better off than others, at, you know, at this point in history. But, you know, yeah, sure, they made it through those good times, bad times, and times of persecution, and on, and invasions, and everything else. And, you know, bottom line was God didn't choose to come back. You know, and I'm sure Christians 1,000 years ago were going, man, you know, it's really terrible in my country, and, you know, it stinks to be a whatever, you know, and surely Christ is going to come back again, mm-hmm. or we're in the last days. And then, you know, they died off, and things got better in their country, and, you know, those Christians in those countries aren't thinking that. Like, you know, now we're looking at it, thinking, oh, we've had all these great years of, you know, positive Christian influence, and now we're not.
And then from a political point of view, you go back to this one thing. If this president gets to nominate one Supreme Court justice, let's say they get a second term, in an 8-year term, they could possibly have 3 to 5 justices that they'll appoint in 2 terms. Once they do that, you need to go with the average span of a justice, 30 to 40 years. We are talking about our 10-year-old children being 50, 60 years old before they see the ability to change whatever course of action we begin today with this election. And in that, and again, that author says, if it comes down to that thought process alone, like Samson began to deliver, maybe Trump might be the best to begin to reverse the courses of actions that we see through our Supreme Courts.
Right.
And for North Carolina.
For,
you know, again, I'm not going to argue with, you know, trying to get, you know, the Western states to do something different.
Right.
But, you know, for us in our state.
Well, a vote for Gary Johnson in our state is a vote for Hillary.
Right.
I disagree. I think at some point you've got to break the three-party system if you're going to do anything to save America.
You've
got to
break the two-party system.
The two-party system.
And get into a three-party system.
And get into a three-party system. And the reason I still might not vote for Donald Trump despite that scenario is because the higher the percentage of third party gets.
So you described
gets,
a scenario
right.
that made it easier for my conscience to vote for Trump,
mm-hmm.
and then you're not even going to do it yourself.
I didn't say he might. I said
he might
because I want to see.
I sure am glad you're going to Thailand.
I want a third party to get above that 5% threshold.
So I'll be on equal footing. That I think will help you. Okay, you know when you're watching in the Law and Order or something like this, and you've got the mob that comes by some guy's storefront and requires money from him for protection.
Right, right.
And you know that the guy's conflicted because he knows this is wrong, but it's pragmatic.
Yeah.
He knows his family's going to be killed, his business is not going to survive if he doesn't pay these people money.
Right.
Well, there comes some time where the police come in into the scene, and all of the, and they're trying to convince this guy to testify or something. And what do the police always say? We can protect you. And half the time, they can't. You know, half the time, the witness gets shot or something. Because the reality is, the reality, not all the talking, but the reality is, the mob really has the power. They're the ones that have the upper hand in that situation. And so, year after year, people make pragmatic decisions. And I'm sure even some of these, if you take that out of just like, the fantasy world of TV, these are based on reality situations in America, I'm sure. Somewhere along the line, there had to be a righteous person who found themselves in that situation.
So you're calling Joey a righteous person?
This is just an example.
Yes, okay. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this.
I can only imagine that in the past...
Computed anyway.
I can only imagine that in the past 150 years... as immigrants came into our country, and there were pockets of the mob and other family organizations, nationalities that were protected, you know, the Germans, the Russians, and all of that, that there was a righteous, God-fearing person that found themselves in a situation in which they had to make a pragmatic decision that their conscience was bothered by that decision. You know, I want my family to live. This guy comes by and demands this money every week. And then we know that there are certain people who stood up to those bullies.
Yep.
And some of them survived and some of them didn't. And it's all kind of about timing, because we know that there's probably less organized crime and mob that do that kind of thing now in America than there was at a time in America. And it came because people stood up to these bullies. So Joey's point is very well founded, but I guess you have to ask, is this the time when the third-party candidate might have that moment when we can change history?
And if Joey wants the third-party candidate to change history, then he needs to vote for Trump in the state of North Carolina.
That is potentially the case.
But we also don't need to forget that the Senate race is just as important, because they're the ones who will approve the appointment.
Yeah, probably.
It doesn't matter if Trump wins
for all the other offices.
So make sure that you're looking at North Carolina's senators and where they stand, because we do have a senatorial seat up for election. And remember, all House of Representatives seats are up every 2 years, so that means all 435 seats are open for re-election, and one-third of the U.S. Senate is open for re-election. So if you're in a state with a senatorial race, this is just as viable a discussion and consideration as it is in your voting for the presidential candidate.
Yeah,
I would say it might even be even more important,
because they are the ones who, well,
especially
can
when you
an
think
appointment.
About, yeah, oh, yeah, that's it. That what
the
you
checks,
just meant.
The checks and balance.
Yeah, it's huge.
Is the whole reason why a president has never been able
really
to
if Hillary
all
gets
their
elected
stuff.
And you have a Republican House and a Republican Senate, there's not going to be a whole lot that you can do.
Right. All
at
she can do
day,
all she can do is God. Wait yeah. for 2 years and hope they turn over the House.
Well, and I would also point out that when you consider, let's talk about the international students that come to our own academy, when you consider what they think about America, they don't consult the Supreme Court decisions. They don't consult members of Congress and the House of Representatives.
No, they look at our figurehead.
They look at Hollywood. And they think America is Hollywood. So in many of these cases, it doesn't even really matter the elected officials. There are other forces in play in America that are shaping the culture and what we would consider the slide of the culture into the gutter, that it's almost as if the elected officials are reflecting that and not the other way around. We talk about it like we make changes to this entity, but the reality is it's an individual basis. And that's why, you know, in the case with Samson, somehow Samson's disobedience to God changed the way God acted in the situation. When Samson disobeyed God and let them cut his hair, fell, you know, prey to that woman's guiles, then God didn't give him the strength anymore. And that's an individual thing. The point wasn't it was a nationality thing. That was Samson, because not everybody took a Nazirite vow. It was only Samson. And so we can't just wrest that out of context and say that if we do this again, God's going to bless our country.
You mean I can't quote 2 Chronicles 7:14 and just declare that if my people are called by my name and just apply it? It has to be for Israel?
But every 4 years, we've got these people that want to do this. I have to have a warm and fuzzy about my political and my Christian stance. They have to sit side by side. I have to justify the one with the Bible. And if I can't do that, then I can't vote for somebody. Well, that's ridiculous. You don't do that when you're buying a lawnmower. You know? You buy the best lawnmower.
I wish I could feel better about Trump. I mean,
I do too.
You know, I really
do. I
do
too.
But I can't. I mean, I listen to him after debate, and I just want to vomit.
And that might be a situation, just like the example with the man and his family who said, okay, enough's enough. I've given this hoodlum enough money. I might die today, but I'm telling him no.
And that's kind of where I'm at. Even in spite of that, I can't see how realistically, other than the potential to appoint one Supreme Court justice, how he's going to be any better than Hillary Clinton looking at his complete and total track record. He's just as much a sleazeball as she is. He has just done it in a different arena. He's done it in business, and she's done it in politics.
And I have friends who are moderate Republicans and moderate Democrats, meaning that they tend towards the center, but they're in both political parties. And they have told me for the first time since they started voting at 18 years of old, that they're honestly considering voting third party.
And we don't know how well the third party is going to do, because half the time on these little these polls that happen on these phone calls, they're not even mentioned in the poll.
Yeah.
Would you vote for Trump or Hillary?
Right. Yeah.
And we'll look in your eyes as your breath goes out of your body and the blood gurgles and you say, I have a clear conscience. And they'll come move your body off and bring the next store owner in.
That's right.
So for our audience, I think we have
we'll
two
leave
words.
Your best comforting look.
Tell us our two words, Nate.
Stop it! Right.
Just stop.
All right, well, that was the article from Grandstand and comparing Trump to Samson in some indirect way. Who are you going to vote for?
And unfortunately, some of you are going to have to spend eternity with us in heaven, even though you think that you're not. So,
because we're elect.
Right. We're elect.
Done deal,
man.
And
the other half, man.
And you have no impact on that. Right. It was decided before the foundation of the world.
And early voting starts today in North Carolina.
Yeah.
It does, yeah. All right, thanks for listening. Have a great day.